At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the 2013 Cellulosic Biofuel Potential Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question during this time, simply press star and the number 1 on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Brent Erickson, Executive Vice President, Industrial Biotechnologies. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, operator, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to BIO's Roundtable for Reporters on the Renewable Fuel Standard. The advanced biofuels industry is awaiting EPA's release of the 2013 renewable volume obligations, as are many other people. Unfortunately, we don't know exactly when that will happen, but it should happen fairly soon. These rules are vitally important to companies commercializing advanced biofuels and their investors, and we would like them to be released as soon as possible. Joining us today are a few of our member companies who are making significant investments, putting steel in the ground, creating jobs, and developing technologies to produce cellulosic biofuels. In most cases, producing them right alongside conventional biofuels. We have Chris Stanley, Executive Vice President of Abengoa Bioenergy, Wade Roby, Board Member of POET DSM Advanced Biofuels, and Jan Konings, Global Business Director for Biorefineries DuPont Industrial Biosciences, and a Board Member of Butamax Advanced Biofuels, DuPont's joint venture with BP and butanol. Each speaker will have an opportunity for opening remarks, and then we'll open the call to questions from reporters on the line. 2013 is shaping up to be a pivotal year for cellulosic and advanced biofuels. The first few companies are actually commissioning commercial biorefineries as we speak, and that's an exciting development. And more producers are breaking ground and completing construction of additional commercial biorefineries. These new facilities are spreading across the country, making use of a wide variety of cellulosic feedstocks and new technologies. The visible progress of these companies represents not just years of research and development and millions of dollars in investment, but also future opportunities for economic growth, investment, and most importantly, employment opportunities and job creation and economic growth for our country. The accomplishments of the biotech industry can't be overstated. For any industry to move from the drawing board to pilot scale and demonstration facilities into commercial scale within the span of a decade is really tremendous. And to do so during a severe economic downturn is all the more amazing. The visible progress of the industry is proof that the renewable fuels standard is working as Congress designed it to work. We need to keep it working consistently and with timely rulemakings to assure investors in the industry. We expect the success of the first few projects coming online now and over the next 2 years will encourage additional investments. Stability in the renewable fuel standard is crucial to that investment. These policies serve an important purpose, improving the nation's energy security and health and the environment by bringing new technologies to the marketplace. Of course, there are competing industries who would like to preserve their long-standing control of the fuel market and use every legalistic and regulatory delay at their disposal to hinder the growth of the renewable fuel industry. And that is one of the primary reasons that BIO and the companies on the call today have helped form Fuels America, an organization to promote the renewable fuel standard. While other industry groups are spending large amounts of money to undermine or at least destabilize the RFS, we think it's time for Congress to reaffirm its commitments to this successful policy. So with that, I'll introduce each of the speakers in turn. First, I'd like to introduce Christopher G. Stanley, Executive Vice President of Abengoa Bioenergy. Abengoa is in the process of constructing a commercial facility in Hugoton, Kansas, and it has been operating pilot and demonstration facilities in the and Nebraska and Spain, respectively, that use cellulosic feedstocks. Next, I'd like to introduce Wade Roby, board member of Poet DSM, Advanced Biofuels, and then lastly, Jan Koenig, Global Business Director for Biorefiners at DuPont. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Chris to begin his presentation.
Thank you, Brent, and thanks to everyone on the line for joining. I am very happy to participate in this call today and to give everyone an update on Abengoa's efforts to commercialize cellulosic ethanol. First of all, as you all probably have heard by now, the road to commercialization of a new technology is not short, nor is it inexpensive. But commercialization is real and is here today. The development of our technology started about 10 years ago with a collaboration project with the U.S. Department of Energy. We designed and built a pilot plant for cellulosic ethanol, and in 2007, we were able to produce our first batch of cellulosic ethanol from wheat straw. After further refining that technology in our larger demonstration scale facility, which we built and have operated in Salamanca, Spain since 2009, we started construction of the Hugoton, Kansas facility that Brent just referenced. This is a commercial scale cellulosic ethanol plant, 25 million gallons per year, and we started construction a little over a year ago in September of 2011. We expect to start production operations at that facility on schedule and by the end of this year. We've invested hundreds of millions of dollars in this effort, and we firmly believe that the world's energy future depends on having more than one fuel choice. At the same time, we've been able to create jobs and tremendous economic development. The new Kansas facility that we're working on today is providing approximately 300 construction jobs now during this two-year construction period. But in addition, it will provide, after completion, 65 permanent jobs with an annual payroll of approximately $5 million. It will also provide direct payments of approximately $17 million to local feedstock producers within a 50-mile radius of the plant in order to purchase the agricultural residues that previously had no significant market value. To date, we've made great progress on the site. We've purchased and stored over 50,000 tons of wheat and corn crop residues at or near the site, and much of the construction work is completed. We've already installed four massive 1.5 million gallon fermentation tanks. We have 2 6-million gallon wastewater treatment tanks installed. Distillation columns erected, roads are in, boiler and baghouse structures are complete, major pieces of equipment have all been set, the cooling tower is completed, and virtually all equipment is either on the site, installed, or ordered. Frankly, startup is just a few months away. We continue to believe in the value and the promise of cellulosic ethanol and second-generation biofuels in general. Abengoa employs 22,000 people in more than 70 countries, and we certainly could have built these facilities and created these jobs in many places. However, we believe that the U.S. is the key market for development and implementation of these fuels, and this is due largely to long-term forward-looking policies that the U.S. has implemented, such as the Renewable Fuel Standard. This legislation provides a roadmap to increased energy independence and national security with a long-term vision for the U.S. fuel industry through 2022. The RFS has already created and supported over 400,000 U.S. jobs and saved consumers over $50 billion in fuel costs just during 2011 alone. The RFS ensures consumer choice in fuels and has helped to reduce the amount of oil that we have to import here in the U.S. from the Persian Gulf by about 25% since the year 2000. Abengoa is committed to the advancement of renewable fuel as a path to securing a clean energy future for the United States. We also note that despite the recent global recession, multiple other companies have second-generation biofuel facilities in late stages of development or actually under construction in more than 20 U.S. states and also in other countries. This represents billions of dollars in private investment in the industry, and we expect to see a rapid and dramatic increase in the implementation of new technologies and the availability of second-generation biofuels over the next 24 to 36 months. We at Abengoa are extremely proud to be a part of this effort. And with that intro, Brett, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you very much, Chris. That's very interesting developments there down in Kansas, and sounds like things are going very well. Next, I'd like to introduce Wade Roby, board member of POET DSM, Advanced Biofuels. POET DSM is constructing a commercial biorefinery in Emmitsburg, Iowa. and has operated a pilot facility in South Dakota for several years. Poet is one of the largest producers of ethanol in the U.S., and DSM is one of the best biotech innovators. So go ahead, Wade. Thank you.
Thank you, Brent. I appreciate the opportunity to join the call today. The advanced biofuels section of the renewable fuel standard was written thanks to a bold and aggressive vision from Congress to move our nation away from imported oil and toward a reliance on domestic renewable energy. The technology to commercialize cellulosic ethanol had not yet been realized at that point, and the hope was that the RFS would prompt the kind of investment and attention needed to hasten its development. While we are still awaiting word from the EPA on the renewable fuel standard rules for 2013, it is clear that those actual volume targets have been optimistic. However, it is that optimism that has spurred the many projects that are under construction and coming online soon across the United States, as my colleague has indicated. The broad goal of the RFS is being realized today. It has prompted more investment in companies and technology. It has sped the development of this clean domestic energy source. As I know most of you know, Poet signed a joint venture with the Dutch company DSM early last year and formed the Poet DSM Advanced Biofuels. That is foreign investment in U.S. energy production that was prompted in large part by the RFS. We are now pressing forward with full construction of a commercial cellulosic ethanol plant in Emmitsburg, Iowa, with completion scheduled for the end of 2013. The civil site work is largely complete, as are concrete foundations for the biomass receiving building and fermentation building. Fermentation and saccharification tanks have been erected on the site, and tank work will be ongoing throughout the winter. Later this month, we will begin erecting the biomass receiving building, so the project is moving ahead on schedule. Iowa farmers will be our feedstock suppliers, and last fall, under a Poet program, they harvested approximately 85,000 acres of stover in our largest preliminary commercial harvest program to date. Once proven at commercial scale, Poet DSM has ambitious plans to expand its technology to other plants in the Poet network and to license the technology to other producers. Much as the corn ethanol industry ramped up rapidly during the 2000s, the cellulosic ethanol industry can ramp up as quickly to supply even more domestic biofuels to U.S. drivers. Cellulosic ethanol production is on its way, and the United States will soon see its role grow as a leader in moving the world towards a renewable energy future. We believe the renewable fuel standard is delivering this for America. Thank you for the chance to comment, Brent.
Wade, thanks very much. I appreciate that report. Lastly, I'd like to introduce Jan Konings, Global Business Director for Biorefineries at DuPont Industrial Biosciences. DuPont recently broke ground in Nevada, Iowa, on a commercial cellulosic biorefinery. It has operated a demonstration facility in Tennessee for the past several years, and it is commercializing butanol technology through a 50-50 joint venture with BP called Butamax. So take it away, Jan.
Thank you, Brent, and a pleasure to be here. Thanks to everybody for attending. Brent just indicated it. We've broken ground in central Iowa on a 30 million gallon per year cellulosic ethanol plant, and DuPont will invest there well over $200 million in this new production facility. And we plan to start this up in the second half of 2014, and at that point, the plant will employ 60 people on the site and 150 more in feedstock collection, collecting about 370,000 dry tons of biomass in an area of 30 to 40 miles around that plant, contracting with some 400 to 500 farmers there. In addition, as Brent also pointed out, DuPont works with BP and our Butamax joint venture on biobutanol technology. Butamax will commercialize a technology that will allow existing ethanol plants to be retrofit and produce butanol, a drop-in fuel that is compatible with existing infrastructure. And there we expect commercialization in late 2014 or early 2015. I appreciate the introduction Brent just gave us and the remarks made by Chris and Wade about the RFS. I second them, and I want to add a few points to them. In my global role as a business director for biofuels, I travel the world and talk to a lot of people about renewable fuels. And I can tell you from my experience, ever since the RFS, the U.S. has taken the convincing lead in this market. And this is now a growth industry with already substantial scale and value and an enormous market potential. And the U.S. is leading this charge. And this was not the case before the RFS, and this would not be the case without the RFS. Other countries, other regions look at the U.S. and attempt to follow our lead. The advanced position of the U.S. is substantial, and this advantage means investment from all over the world is headed here, as Wade just illustrated and said. This is one of the outcomes, one of the intended outcomes of the vision of the renewable fuel standard. Now, when we listen to those that want to repeal the RFS, like the API, what we hear is essentially an industry organization that wants the United States to turn its back on new technology and to turn its back on these investments on science and our ability to lead the world in this new renewable industry. They want to retain a privileged position, keep the United States dependent on a 20th century technology. And they may have new ways of getting at the old idea, but freeing up carbon from the ground as an energy source is still an old idea. And turning our backs on innovation is certainly not the history in the tradition of the U.S. and of the company that I am with. And that leads me to my final point, which is that we've seen the strategy before, and it never works in the long run. As an experienced manager in DuPont, which is a more than 210-year-old company, American company that has invented and commercialized scores of truly transformative technologies, I can tell you that we have heard these short-sighted arguments in the past when we've brought transformative innovation to the market space. Excuse me. The arguments of the opponents of the RFS are indicative of the same type of short-sighted thinking locked in a strategy of preservation that will continue to expose the U.S. to a single type and a single source of fuel supply and therefore to a vulnerable and volatile supply and a volatile price. Renewable fuels are progress. They're already bringing new investments and green jobs to the U.S. It's a policy that actually works, and we should let it continue to deliver the benefits to the American people that were invested. Thank you, Brent. Back to you.
Thank you very much for a good presentation.